Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the City Council meeting of Arroyo Grande for Tuesday, August 13th, 2019. Can we get a roll call, please?
Councilmember Storton.
Here.
Councilmember Paulding.
Here.
Councilmember George is absent tonight. Mayor Pro Tem Barnidge.
Here.
And Mayor Ray Russom.
Here. Will you please join me in a moment of reflection? Thank you. For agenda review, is there anyone who would like to change anything on the order of the agenda tonight?
No, thank you.
No, thanks. No, thanks.
Okay, then we'll proceed as published. We have no closed session announcements tonight, so perhaps one would move that all ordinance presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
So moved.
Second.
We have motion to second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
None opposed? Motion carries. For special presentations tonight, I'm rushing there because no, we got to go to the flag salute. I went past it. I'm so excited about the special presentation. I got to do the flag salute. All right. For the flag salute, we have the Arroyo Grande Village Improvement Association's Gaya Powell. Come on up.
Hello. Can everyone please rise and place your hand over your heart? I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And definitely please stay and tell us what the VIA has been up to.
Okay, well, we have a lot of exciting things going on. We have two more of our summer concert series shows. One is October 25th with the James Way Band, and then we have one on September 8th, which is the Monte Mills and the Lucky Horseshoe Band. And then we're really super excited about the Beer Feast Festival that's coming up. We'll have over 33 breweries, and we will also be featuring some of the local restaurants. So that'll be a wonderful event that will mostly benefit the five cities' Meals on Wheels. So we're hoping that the community will support that, and it'll be fun. And then we also have a women's expo coming up on October 20th, and that will be featuring some of our local doctors like Dr. David Marquez, Amber Runnerstrom, and some of the wellness practitioners here in the village. And so that'll be a great event too, and that'll be at the Clark Center.
Excellent.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I'm sure those of you at home know that tonight is a very special night for us to make this mayor's commendation. So could we please have Bob Lund meet me at the podium? It's hard to concentrate when you're right there. This is a mayor's commendation presented to Bob Lund. The city of Arroyo Grande recognizes and congratulates you on your retirement as executive director of the Arroyo Grande Village Improvement Association and further recognizes your commitment and countless hours of dedicated service to the city and community through your leadership in this organization. You have served a key role over many years in organizing and managing the Strawberry Festival, Harvest Festival, parades, and other community events in Arroyo Grande for the enjoyment of the city's residents and visitors. Furthermore, since 2007, you've been a champion for the community improvements and beautification through your involvement with Arroyo Grande in Bloom, which has resulted in the city receiving national recognition and many awards from America in Bloom. Your direct involvement in all of these organizations and on various city boards and committees is to be commended, and the city is grateful for dedicated individuals like you who celebrate the city's heritage, encourage beautification efforts, promote volunteerism, and overall for making our city a welcoming and vibrant place to live, work, and play.
Thank you. Thank you all so much. It's been a pleasure and an honor to be a great part of this wonderful community for the last 25, 26 years. And I will continue on with Arroyo Grande in Bloom, so you'll see me on the streets. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It is difficult to overstate how much Bob has done for the city of Rio Grande, so I know he's going to be out there, so we're happy to have you still doing what you do, Bob. Thank you for everything. Thanks for always being my champion as well. 6B, we have the recognition of the city's 2019 Risk Management Award from the California Joint Powers Insurance Authority for Best Overall Performance in the Liability Program. Mr. Bergman.
Let me just give this to you real quick and I'll tell you.
All right.
This is for your council and everyone in the city.
Okay. I guess. Okay, wait.
So officially, this is a award, as the mayor said, 2019 Risk Management Award in the category of Best Overall Performance for agencies with police for the liability program. So what that means in English is we're all a city of 18,000 people, and together we own a whole bunch of assets. And not only do we own these assets, but we let everyone use them. And that means that we're exposed to a lot of liability. And any, you know, if someone hurts themselves, it's a horrible day for us. And if someone's property is damaged because of the assets that everyone owns, a claim against the city is a claim against everyone. And it reduces the amount of money that this organization has to provide the services to our community. So really this award recognizes this combined effort of this entire community, not only from the council that is ensuring that we think about safety and we think about liability constantly as a business practice, but for people who call in and tell us when there's a pothole or when there's graffiti or whatever it's going to be, whatever the liability may be, they're telling us about it. And just this general idea of being prepared and really being not being penny wise and pound foolish. So there's many things that people don't think about when we share these liabilities or these assets. Playground equipment, for one, right? So we invite the entire community and kids to play on playground equipment. And with that comes a responsibility to make sure that that equipment is maintained, that you actually have someone who looks at it frequently, is able to repair it and repair it correctly, and then ultimately know when its lifespan is over and to replace it. We have quite a list of our action plan that we continually try to work on so that we have these policies intertwined in every section of what we do in this community. So we're currently working on a hazard communication program. We're working to replace some bleachers that the time has come to do that. We're implementing money handling procedures, looking at trenching and excavation safety program, and the list goes on and on. And these are things that are part of the daily work program in all your departments in your city. So to me, it's a big deal, and it shows that everyone is working hard and has the business in mind, and I think it's a wonderful metric, and if we keep getting awards like that, then we'll know that we're on the right track. So thank you so much for your leadership, and please enjoy that award.
I wanted to add just two things that you didn't mention that people think about all the time, and there are two sources of liability for the city that we have managed very well. The first one is sidewalks. And that is one where we have trip hazards all over the city that we work very, very hard to mitigate. We're in the middle of a big project on that right now. So again, this is a place where wait for it, trips up cities all the time. And secondly, our award was two cities that have a police department. That's and right. When you don't have a police department, you can't be compared to the other cities there, because there are special liabilities that come with running your own police department. And the fact that we do run such a high level professional police department, and when you add that piece into our liability, we rise straight to the top and got that award. So it's the effects all through each department, but also including the police department as well, because that specially is a piece of that award. So
excellent. Thank you so much.
That takes us to item 7. This is community comments and suggestions. This is where you get to come up to the microphone and talk for 3 minutes on items that are within the purview of the City Council but not on tonight's agenda. So if you would like to come on up, please do.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, members of council and staff, and residents in the audience. Tim Mahoney with Southern California Gas Company. Of course, in this area, PG&E provides the electricity. We provide the natural gas to the residents of Arroyo Grande. So your citizens are essentially my customers. So wanted to kind of give an update on some activity that SoCalGas is moving forward to. You know, in the big picture of the human waste stream in California, there is a lot of natural methane that is produced, this kind of indigenous methane. We call it renewable natural gas. It comes from dairies, aren't very many around here, but there's a lot in the Central Valley, and we've just signed up a big contract to capture that methane that is produced out of the dairies. We're going to scrub it, clean it, odorize it, put it in the pipe, and use that as a renewable natural gas resources. The second source of this indigenous renewable natural gas is from landfills and dumps. So as organic material breaks down, it creates, of course, methane. The closest one from here in the Santa Maria City, they capture that methane at the dump, put it in a pipeline, and they send it a couple miles away to Marion Medical Hospital, where it runs a natural gas-fired microturbine to make electricity. My company is involved in that in just a very small way. We have a tap going into that pipeline, so if the landfill gas ever falls out of spec, they can turn the natural gas from my company, SoCalGas, and we can blend it together, because you have to have natural gas that burns at a certain rate. Otherwise, appliances will either burn too hot, and then they begin to kind of melt, or if it burns too slow, too low in the BTU content, you get improper combustion. But that's a perfect example of how you can capture this renewable natural gas and really use it to the benefit of the community. The last area is, of course, sewer plants, wastewater plants, where there is, of course, a breakdown of organics, and if you can capture again this indigenous renewable natural gas, you're helping out the global warming situation in two ways. Right now, the methane from those three sources goes up into the atmosphere, or you flare it. Flaring's a little bit better than releasing, obviously, but you still get a burn. If you can capture it, put it in a pipe, take that to a fueling station where a natural gas vehicle can use it, then that natural gas vehicle, such as a trash truck, doesn't have to use diesel. It's using the natural gas. So you're kind of cashing the paycheck, if you will, and kind of saving the planet in two different ways. So just wanted to bring that to your attention, that that's ongoing. It's happening now. Let me just close off with this. On July 22, we had a ribbon cutting and a renewable natural gas event at the fueling station on Prado Road in the city. So that's run by Revolution CNG. It's the old J.B. Doers fueling station for natural gas. So it's here, and it's happening, and we're looking forward to doing more in the area. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I just have one. Can I ask him a question?
Yeah, sure. Tim, if you would, stay here.
Just
got one, a question for you.
Just a question out of curiosity, because I'm trying to picture it. How do you capture the gas? You're talking about capturing the gas and putting it in a pipe. How do you capture that?
More importantly, how do you capture it from a dairy?
Okay, yeah, that's a good, and I will send you some photographs.
Oh.
It's not that bad. So over in the valley right now today, and they've been doing this for years, they call it lagooning. You take the cow manure, yeah, and you put it in a large bowl, if you will, a large lagoon. Okay. And that is where then it's covered.
Oh, okay.
So it has a very thick rubberized top on it.
Okay.
Now, they do this in the East, but in the East, you can't use rubber because it's too cold in the Midwest. So they actually put a cement dome over that. Now, I can get you information. But in California, you don't need to worry about that. Okay. So it's a very thick black rubber tent, if you will. Okay. And it's gigantic.
And then you have a hose hooked up to that thing.
Essentially, okay. Yes.
It's fascinating, actually.
Yeah, it's real good. You've probably seen photos and stories they've been running in the paper about it, because it's kind of a cool, neat technology.
So when I'm driving out to Clovis,
yes,
and I see a giant pile that has a rubber top with tires all over it, is that what I'm looking at?
No. That is a way in which you, if you're not capturing the methane, they pile the manure, and in order to keep the dust and it from spreading, they put a black top on it. That black plastic is held down with tires so the wind doesn't blow it.
Got it.
So yeah, this is a much more lower profile, if you will, because it's dug down, and so it just has a small rise. So it's not as it's less visible in that. But that's what they're doing out there.
Thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Certainly. Thank you. Right. Bye bye.
Would anyone else like to come forward on items not on tonight's agenda?
Hi, that was a fitting intro. My name is Christopher Moore, and I'm actually with the California Public Utilities Commission, and we regulate public utilities, so which are operated by private companies in this area, which include AT&T, PG&E, and SoCal Gas. So we are the regulator. We have a relationship which is often collaborative. Sometimes there's conflict in there as well. Local governments are an important partner. And if you have questions related to natural gas, building electrification, also top issues in this area are related to public safety power shutoffs, or of course Diablo Canyon, I'm a resource that you can reach out to. I can connect you with our staff, who can give you an unbiased view, or CPUC's view of the policy issue under consideration. I also noticed on the agenda tonight you're looking at possibly joining Monterey Bay Community Power. CCAs are an important new issue out there too, and there could be a lot of noise and questions around that, and I can help you connect you with our staff.
Do you have business cards that you could leave with our city clerk?
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to come forward? Items not on tonight's agenda.
Hi, I'm Samuel Grenemeyer. I'm here to talk about the Repair Cafe. It's for the exploration station. They take broken things and they get a lot of people together and they fix it up and sell it. Like recently, the exploration station is right now fixing broken computers and giving them to teens because some teens can't afford a computer. So the Repair Cafe is going to happen on October 6th, 1 to 5 p.m. at the Exploration Station. It's basically where, they fix a bunch of things. So I've got a business card. It's got the person and the name on it. Okay. Yeah, that's all.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Would anyone else like to come forward on items not on tonight's agenda? Seeing no one, we'll move that forward to the consent agenda, items 8A through 8I. Does anyone wish to pull any of those items?
No.
I just had one question on 8E, but just a quick question.
I have a question too. I have to get it open. Do you have anything?
No questions.
Okay, so bear with me, please. I have to get into my iPad here, because I think mine's before that. And for me, I have a quick question about 8A, so no need to pull. Why don't we go ahead and ask our questions, and then we'll go to public comments, so that way if those questions came up in the public, that will get taken care of. For me, this is about the cash disbursements, so
We're ready.
Excellent. All right. So I don't think I'm confused, but clearly I must be if I have to ask the question. We have our animal services contract, and I'm not talking about what's on the agenda later, which is our annual thing. And then in the check listing, we have a $25,000 check going to the animal services contract for quarter four. So my question is specifically, is that what's going for the construction of the new one, or can you please explain how that fits into the grand picture of animal services?
So the contract for fiscal year 18-19 was about $101,000, so that's a $25,000 quarterly payment. So the fourth quarter got paid just recently.
Okay.
For last fiscal year.
All right, and then my other question is related to the item that's on the agenda that has to do with that, so I'll save that for when we get to that piece of the agenda. So that was my only question about that. Councilmember Storton on item 8E.
I was just curious with the Bridge Street Bridge project, which is a very exciting project for our community, if we could just give a real quick timeline. It looks like we're getting close to construction and work being actually completed, so just maybe a little highlight on what that timeline is going to be from that point forward.
Okay, yes, thank you. We just actually had a big powwow conference call today with Caltrans to confirm our direction. We are moving our programming up a year, and so we do anticipate going into construction next year, at very end of May, beginning of June. We have a construction timeline estimate of 7 months, may go a little longer depending on many factors, but that is the current estimate. So the team, the consultant team and city team and Caltrans team is all in agreement that we'll advance construction, and that is the current timeline. So it is very exciting. It's been a long time in design and alternative selection and so forth, so we are anxious to get it going.
Thank you for the update.
With that, let's open this up to the public. Would anyone like to come forward and talk about any of the items collectively 8A through 8I? Seeing no one, what is the will of the council?
I would move that we approve items 8A through 8I.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Can we get a roll call, please?
Mayor Pro Tem Barnidge?
Yes.
Councilmember Paulding?
Yes.
Councilmember Shorten?
Yes.
And Mayor Ray Russom?
Yes. Do we need to read H? It's not an ordinance, but...
No, as a resolution, we don't.
Okay. All right, great. This brings us to item 9A. This is consideration of an introduction of an ordinance amending sections of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code relating to smoking and the regulation of tobacco retailers. Director McClish.
I'm going to turn the presentation over to Heather Whittem, our city attorney, and she prepared the ordinance and I'm just going to assist with any questions as needed.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. At the May 28th City Council meeting, staff was directed to revise the city's smoking ordinance to include, electronic cigarettes. And for those who may not be familiar with electronic cigarettes or e-cigarettes or vapes, they are battery-operated devices often designed to resemble a cigarette that deliver and emit a nicotine-containing aerosol. The California Department of Public Health has advised that in addition to nicotine, electronic cigarettes can contain heavy metals like lead and possibly cancer-causing agents. In addition to broadening the definition of smoking, since we were in the ordinance and in the sections involving smoking, we took the opportunity to update the sections of the municipal code related to smoking that are no longer consistent with state law due to some changes in state law, which I'll discuss briefly as we move forward. So the city currently prohibits smoking in its public parks, trails, pedestrian bridges, public open spaces, and sports facilities. And this is the existing definition, which is aimed at traditional lit or combustible smoking devices, such as cigarettes, cigars, pipes, because when this was drafted, we didn't have e-cigarettes on our radar. So here the proposed prohibition continues to prohibit smoking in the same places, but the definition has been amended to specifically include electronic cigarettes and cannabis. The city also currently prohibits smoking in arcades. So while we were in there, we went ahead and modified the definition of smoking contained in that section as well to include e-cigarettes and cannabis.
Do we have an arcade?
And I thought we would take this opportunity to point out that in addition to the city's restrictions on smoking, state law has lots of restrictions on smoking that would include the following locations that would apply to us. Within 20 feet of main entrances, exits, and operable windows of public buildings, within playgrounds or youth sports facilities, in indoor workplaces, including bars and restaurants, with certain exceptions, in daycare facilities, and in a car when a child is present. State law also prohibits the smoking or ingestion of cannabis or cannabis products in all public places and wherever smoking tobacco is prohibited. Smoking or ingesting cannabis is also prohibited while driving a vehicle or being a passenger in a vehicle. Lastly, we made a few revisions to existing regulatory sections of the code in order to remain consistent with state law. In 2016, state law changed and the legal age for smoking went from 18 to 21. So as a result of that, we had to modify our sections that referred to the old age of 18. So the ordinance is presented to you this evening for introduction, and achieves the direction that we were provided, and I'm available to answer any questions should you have them.
Councilmember Paulding.
Thank you for the presentation. The only question I have relates to if we have, as a city, any statistics regarding littering, because the thought that occurred to me was that, to some extent, we probably have less litter because people vape. Do we know anything about that? No?
I don't know of any statistics we have about littering, perhaps.
Okay.
I guess it would be Public Works who does most of the maintenance and cleanup. I don't know if they've seen any change.
I'd assume we just have anecdotal evidence. And as a person who picks up trash, there's generally a lot of cigarette butts, but you do see the little vape containers, too, as part of it. So all we got is some anecdotal evidence for you that both of them end up on the ground sometimes.
Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem,
one quick question. I was asked the question a couple months ago about some vaping that was going on outside of business, and that it was bothering the people inside the business. They were right outside. So just thinking now, fast forward to this, when we have this on the books, if that happened again, or cigarettes for that matter, it's a complaint driven ordinance, correct? I mean,
well, we didn't propose modifying our current prohibitions on locations for smoking.
Mm-hmm.
So unless that falls within our definition of a public park, trail, pedestrian bridge, public open space, or one of the state's prohibitions,
it would be the state.
But I don't know that it would, because the state prohibits smoking within 20 feet of main entrances of buildings, but those are public buildings.
So that wouldn't necessarily apply
in front of a private business.
Okay. All right. Well, Okay, so I'll think about that. But if someone was bothered by people continually vaping, they would just, it would be calling the city and complaining. And I mean, who would, how are we going to enforce this
law? Well, vaping is not illegal everywhere in the city.
No. So. I mean, outside City Hall, 20
yeah.
feet.
Yeah, if
no,
it
I
was
mean,
a prohibited location, right. it, certainly, yeah, they could, I guess it'd be the police department and okay. report it. And then okay. our police department would go out and enforce either our code or state law, whatever it was violating.
Right. I mean, just where it already is prohibited for cigarette smoke. I'm just thinking that cigarette smoke is, I don't ever smell cigarette smoke anymore. More. It's, but I definitely see the vaping a lot more often. So at wherever you, it's not allowed. So the ballpark, the park, the outside of a public building. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
I have nothing. Thank you.
I have a couple questions. So if the city or the city council wanted to extend the prohibitions to address council member or Mayor Pro Tem's concern, what would that look like in terms of an ordinance?
Well, we could bring back a more extensive ordinance that had additional prohibitions that could address additional locations where you're concerned people are smoking to prohibit smoking in those locations.
So it's just a question of how much of a problem we believe it is.
Exactly. You know, some cities, like if you have a beach, some cities will prohibit smoking on the beach. Those are prohibitions that go beyond what the state prohibits that an individual city feels would benefit their citizens or, you know, improve the public health, safety, and welfare of their citizenry. So if there was a location where you felt it was a problem, we could consider modifying the ordinance to include that location.
Okay. And this question is probably for Teresa. Teresa, do we currently, I don't believe we have any specific current retailers in the city of Rio Grande that sell vaping products. Am I right? I'm thinking a smoke shop kind of thing, not a liquor store that sells some things. You know, like there's one, I'm thinking specifically of one right next to Yamato in Grover Beach. We don't have anything like that in Arroyo Grande, correct?
Yeah, we did, but I do not think at this current time we do.
So I'm interested in making sure we don't have another one. So is that something that can be done administratively in this forum, or would we have to re-agendize that to make that happen?
We would have to re-agendize that. It would be actually a code change for a zoning change for a category of restricted retail.
As a prohibited yeah. use kind of thing? Okay.
Correct.
Got it. Okay.
One more
question. Yeah, please, go ahead.
Do we know, I should have asked this ahead of time, so I apologize. Do we know which cities in San Luis Obispo County have a ban on smoking in public?
I did not do a survey. I think the cities vary. I don't know what all the different cities have in place.
I know the city of San Luis Obispo.
That's what I was thinking. That was maybe the only one that mm-hmm. I was thinking of.
I think there were a couple that just changed.
Oh.
Yeah, San Luis has always been very progressive with the smoking, and
yeah.
I'm sure they have a more rigorous ordinance.
I'm not 100% sure I'm about to say this right, but I believe Paso just did it. There was a grid that came out from a group of people that were a group of teenagers.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And they showed, mm-hmm. And there was something in the paper about one of the cities surpassing San Luis in its progressive stance on smoking in public. And I believe it was Paso. I know it was one of the seven cities. I'm pretty sure it was not Grover.
Right.
And my brain works this way. It was a P. So it's either Paso or Pismo. I'm pretty sure it was Paso.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm interested in looking at that.
Okay.
But let's kind of see how this goes tonight. Mm-hmm. So let's open this up to public comment then. Would anyone like to come and speak on this item? You look like you're thinking about it, son. Okay. All right, then with that, let's bring it back here. Councilmember Storton, you have anything to say on this subject?
No, just thank you for the presentation. And one of my questions was actually answered by the city attorney that even though cannabis is legal, it's illegal to smoke in vehicles. as you're operating the vehicle. Well, I think any time you're in a vehicle, but sometimes I drive down the street and definitely smell product coming from cars. And I think just people need to know, just because it's legal, it's not legal in a vehicle.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem?
I am in agreement of moving forward with the modified changes of the ordinance.
I would, thank you. I would echo those comments. Thank you for the well-drafted ordinance and changes. Appreciate that.
Would someone like to make a motion? All right, I'll make a motion to accept and introduce an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande amending sections of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code relating to smoking and the regulation of tobacco retailers.
Second.
Any discussion? We have motion and a second. Can we get a roll call, please?
Mayor Ray Russom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Barnidge?
Yes.
Councilmember Paulding?
Yes.
And Councilmember Storton?
Yes.
Thank you. We have no old business tonight, so that moves us to new business, item 11A. This is discussion and direction by the City Council related to procuring an agreement to conduct a voter opinion survey for a potential future ballot measure. City Manager Bergman.
Good evening, Mayor, Council Members, Jim Bergman, City Manager. Back in May 2019, the council discussed revenue in general and gave direction for the staff to seek more information about a ballot measure process and surveys. So I wanted to start off my presentation tonight more for the people at home to give them a bigger context of this conversation and what your council has been talking about over the last 6 months or so. First, a community issue that we've dealt with is these rising expenses. So we've been very proactive. We looked forward 10 years. We looked at the services we provide. We tried to estimate what's going to happen in the next 10 years. Will there be a recession? What are our costs going to be? And we found that going the way we were, our expenses were going to rise faster than our revenues. So the solution that was brought to the table and has been adopted by the council was we reduced department budgets, we reduced interest costs on pensions by paying down unfunded liabilities. We increased fees for individual activities throughout the city, and we also reduced staff. Really, that has resulted in this fiscal sustainability based on these future assumptions. And really, in the most general terms, the services that we provide today at the levels that people see them, we believe that's going to be sustainable for the next 10 years. And I like to see a big check mark on that, that part has been done. And we're all adjusting to it, and our city is still doing well. But another community issue that we've been talking about for many, many years is deferred maintenance or unfunded maintenance. So all the assets that we currently already own, the roads, the sidewalks, the street trees, the parks, the play equipment, storm drainage conveyances, public buildings, past staff has showed that there's just not enough money to really maintain those assets that we have currently in a really fiscally appropriate way, right? Don't let things fall apart to a point where it costs so much to repair them. We don't want to do that, but we certainly know that you know, there's always more wants than there are resources. So that was one issue that we're trying to talk about and trying to find solutions for. And then another issue is expanded services. So what services do we want more of? What are new services? Probably this is highlighted best in discussions about fire service when we talked about response times and the number of people on an engine, the equipment that they need. So these are still two issues that we're trying to address. So we talked a little bit about raising revenue. We talked about economic development, and that would be targeted development that somehow increases revenues to the city, either by increased property tax or increased sales tax. And that's something we're going to be talking about very soon as we work into a strategic plan. But we also know that that's long-term in results that we may see from that. But then another option is something that no one really likes to talk about, is you could increase existing revenue, and the revenue from that the city receives is through sales tax, property tax, what's commonly referred to as a hotel tax or transient occupancy tax, business license tax. We have some other things like franchise fees. If you're a cable company and you use our streets, you pay a fee. But really, this is about what are some options in raising revenues. So what we did was we went back and we talked to three firms, and they've all given us the same kind of idea about this is the process that cities go through when you're thinking about talking to the voters. And the first is identify needs, and give you a little bit of context. It's stuff that I think we talk about all the time in this room and in City Hall. The second part that is recommended and probably most cities follow is you go out and you survey a representative sample of your voters. So you wanna start early on and objectively evaluate what's the possibility of a ballot measure being supported by the community. And really, it's an opportunity to understand voters' preferences for how those funds would be spent. That's the current item tonight. Three would be, once you get that information from the survey back, then this council and this community, and especially the council, will decide whether or not to move forward with the ballot measure. And we do know that there are costs associated with that. So if you move forward, they recommend that you use the results of the survey to develop a clear resident ballot label language that effectively communicates how measure funds will be used and how accountability will be provided. Again, that's a future decision. Fifth, will be another future decision of, if you're moving forward with that, you conduct legally permissible public outreach and education. So somewhere in the laws is there's a line between valid communication of trying to talk to everyone in your city about what the issues are, what are potential solutions, and then the other side of the line is campaigning for an issue. And we always need to be on this public outreach and education side of it. So that will eventually result in probably another consultant who can assist us in doing that outreach and making sure that we're within the line. And certainly a lot of work will be done with our city attorney at that time. And then lastly, you place the measure on the ballot, another future decision by the council, and then you await the election results. So I really look at this as the survey as a tool. And really, although we all play different roles in the community, I just kind of generally put us into three hunks or categories. One is the city council. You represent all 18,000 people. You have a staff which is out on the front lines every day. We're trying to communicate with you what are the needs of the community from our perspective. And then lastly, in California, we set this up so that the voters, they will allow council members and legislators to make a lot of decisions and set a lot of policies. But in California, ultimately, the voters get to approve or control the purse strings of whether or not taxes are increased or new taxes are created. So really, this is about how do we get all three of these segments of our community communicating, understanding each other, and then ultimately we have better understanding, we try to find a solution together. So we went out, I did some phone calls, I talked with other city managers, and I was given I compiled a list of three firms that do this type of work throughout California. All three of them came highly recommended All three of them, a little unusual, but we included the proposals with you for you tonight and for the public. What I'm seeing, and when we put it in a chart like this, we try to analyze it and compare and contrast, we're not reinventing a wheel here. This is a lot of experience and a lot of very specialized knowledge. All of these firms had a PhD heading these firms, and their job is to know statistics, what's valid, how do you go out and reach to people. So what we're seeing the commonality in all of these is they don't just rely on landline telephones anymore. Now with cell phones, so not only do people not, a lot of people don't have landlines anymore, but now on our cell phone, if we don't know who the caller is, we probably just press a little button on the side and it goes to voicemail or it gets ignored. So they're looking at other ways to reach people to make sure that they get this representative sample. So they're all doing some sort of dual mode process, telephone, online, and really they get into kind of their individual trade secrets of how they're going to go out and reach these voters. Sample size all seems to be between 200 and 400. I assume at some point as you get more and more people, you just get diminishing returns on it. It costs more money, more time to do. And really what you're doing is you're trying to get into a reasonable plus or minus so that when these consultants give us information, we're at least be able to say, okay, we know there's a range here, right? So if something's only polling at 50% and you got a plus or minus of 7, that gives you a good clue. But if it's polling at 80%, then you might feel really comfortable moving forward, like you're in sync with the voters. They all had about the same range of survey minutes, so between 15 and 20 minutes once you get someone on the phone or online. How long are you going to spend with them? They all give us, once they collect the data, they all go in and they analyze it. They try to give us the best information we can get, but their deliverables are all a kickoff meeting with staff. They try to understand what's going on in the community. What are the issues? What are we trying to achieve? They help staff develop these questions, whether it's 40 questions, 60 questions. What are we trying to learn from the people? They analyze it. They give us a presentation. They come here to your council. They tell you what they found out and leave that for open communication in the public. All about the same amount of time. No one really specified if this is business days or calendar days, but we're looking at about 2 months to do this work. And then the cost was all within a range of from $21,000 to $28,000. Some of these had a little bit of add-ons. You can see that some said we'll do 200 or 300. So there's a different cost in FM3, you can see, depending on how many they do. Where, in True North, they said, we're going to do 300 minimum, but we're going to try to get, much more than that. Or like Godby just says, no, we need to get 400 to get to a level where we're confident in the results. So the fiscal impact is right now in your budget, you have allocated a line item of $25,000 in the budget. So you do have the money allocated and ready to go. Really, we present this to you so that you can know more about the process. Staff has had phone conversations with each one of these groups. We've read their proposals. We have met as an executive team and went through each proposal very carefully. We think that we have identified the group that we want to go with, it's certainly up to your discretion on if you want to weigh in on which one you like the most. You're welcome to do that, or if you have questions or comments or more things that you wanted to dig a little bit deeper into with the three and try to get somewhere that you specifically want to go, we can do that also. So that's my presentation tonight, and I'm here to answer any questions, and so is Kelly and Heather.
Thank you.
Do you have any questions?
Thank you for the presentation. My first question is, you have a recommendation that we provide direction to you to select one of these three firms. I agree with you that they all seem very qualified. They have slight differences in methodology. But why didn't we get a staff recommendation? And then what is the staff recommendation?
Okay, well, I didn't get a clear indication of the last time I was here to, okay, it's in the budget, Jim, run forward with this. So I had this kind of question. Okay, let's present this here and let's make sure that we all have the information and we're all going forward. As staff, I think we asked a lot of questions. We tried to learn more about this process, but ultimately, we want to make sure that you're comfortable with this. And generally, we don't put multiple applications together and then have the council choose. It could be done, but it's not really what we do. So my thing is I was kind of in this middle land, and I wanted you to see at least that we're not reinventing a wheel. This is something that's pretty standard. It's a known process. If you want me to say the name of the one that I prefer right now, I don't mind doing that. But at the same time, you might have some input that you want a very specific thing. I would like to go back and talk to each one, see if they deliver that or not, and then use that as a decision. And you know, if I also put out a recommendation of which one we want right now, and I go back and I call them up, they're all pretty busy. There's a lot of cities out there doing this, and they say, we just don't have the time for this one. And then I'm kind of like looking for the second person to go to the dance. So I'm not trying to be wishy-washy or not trying to hide a recommendation. That's my honest answer to you of where we're going here.
Thank you. A couple other questions and comments I'll save for when we share our comments. In terms of scope, is it common to add another survey question into the mix? For example, this council has previously, or prior councils have discussed polling the public on cannabis, or cannabis tax, something like that. Is that common to include in this process? Would we be missing an opportunity if we didn't at least assess that at this point in time?
Yeah, so the first part of this process, anyone that's selected, is really developing these questions. And when I talked to them about introducing other questions, and it seemed like all of them said, yes, you could introduce other questions. This is a good opportunity to get that idea from the voters of what they support or what they don't support. They just always gave this kind of blanket caution. You want to use a little bit of reserve or discretion that you don't make the survey too broad. What you're trying to find out about is services, what people want, what they're willing to pay, what, you know, make sure that what we're thinking is important to them too. So it can be done, and I think all of them can do it.
Okay. My last question relates to some concerns I've heard from the public about just the cost of this, and some folks have indicated essentially the question of why can't we do this in-house, and I think it's very clear looking at the scope of these proposals that you need an expert to do this. But in terms of cost control, you indicated this is basically the first phase. If we the council provides direction and we end up selecting this pollster and they complete that and essentially it makes sense to move forward, what type of cost would we be looking at then to go to the next phase and perhaps hire another consultant, as you indicated, might be necessary?
I think I'm going to put Kelly on the spot just a little bit for what does it cost to actually put a ballot measure on through the county? I'm pretty sure she knows that. And then my other answer is I don't know what the other consultants cost, but we'll certainly look into it.
With regard to public relations, we don't have that number. The cost for adding a measure is minimal. We generally add $3,000 to $5,000 to our general election costs. because really it's just the cost of the extra pages in the sample ballot, you know, printing the measure, which could be, it could be a 10, if it's a 10-page ordinance, you know. So it's just the printing costs that are typical.
So those costs seem pretty minimal for the ballot
itself. Recorder,
but the entity that would draft the language, for example, in the measure, that would be that second PR consultant.
That's right, and using this data here. So this just kind of breaks it up into little increments, right? You're testing the water instead of just saying, hey, we're going down this road, let's go all in. So this gives you at least one stopping point if you feel like, wow, we're out of sync with the community.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Starton?
Yeah, I just have a couple, please. When you on the graph that you showed the three different companies, there was a mention, two of them called it a top-line summary. I imagine it's just a short narrative of the content, but I just wanted to make sure
that's what I believe it is, you know, maybe when they first get the data, they're saying, okay, this is what we're finding, and now we're going to go and really crunch the numbers. And, so I think they're all, even though one didn't mention it, I think they're all going to give us that product.
Okay. And it looks like we went from 200 to 400 with the amount of people that would be surveyed. I'm kind of curious as to, it looks like there's some accuracy, margin of error goes up a little higher with the lower number. So I guess that's just based upon the number of people that they're surveying.
Yeah, I just wrote it down on my notes here. With 200, they're looking at plus or minus 6.9%.
Right.
With 300, plus or minus 5.7%. And with 400, plus or minus 4.9%.
Okay.
So it's really more you spend, the more certainty you're going to get in that, in their confidence.
And then looking through all the proposals, I noticed a couple of things in the other. There's some portions of each proposal that I liked,
mm-hmm.
but that wasn't necessarily offered in the packet from for each vendor. So I was curious as to the flexibility of liking something from one and saying, well, if we select the other, can they offer something like that?
Right. If you're able to identify those things that you like, we can talk to the others about doing it. Each one seems to be, they're in the business and they're trying to find what their competitive advantage is on each one. But
okay. Well, I'll mention that at comments
if
we get that far. And that's my questions for now.
Mayor Pro Tem?
Thank you. Kelly, when is the, looking kind of forward at the timeline, what's the deadline that we have to sort of know if we need to put something on the ballot for the county?
So historically, they have to have all of our materials by August, early August. So historically, I've drafted calendars for the November election to, we usually call the election for candidates the first meeting in June. Mm-hmm. And the latest date that I prefer just to get our stuff into the county is the second meeting in June.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the initial target. We are dark the first meeting in July, so that always makes me kind of nervous.
Mm-hmm.
But it just allows the opportunity to utilize the public review periods and the arguments in favor and potential rebuttals and getting all those timelines and deadlines in before the August. It's usually this first, second week in August, so we have to get everything to the county.
Okay, so then, Jim, looking at the timeline for this, has staff sort of broken it down? Because, you know, we have to go after this, we have to go on. If we want to after this, we're going to move on to this next step. Does it seem like we're rushed at all, or there's a fair amount? Because, you know, June, that's a ways away. I mean, so does it seem like we're kind of, it's going to work out okay?
I think we're right in the timeline.
Okay.
Everyone that we talked to was, you're. This is the right time to go to start to get information for November of 2020.
Okay. Thank you for that. And then the other question, well, just two questions. So I was surprised when I read the packet that it was only 200 to 400 because we have, I think it was 12,000, they expect 12,000 voters. But this is common, this little sampling, small sampling.
Yeah, I guess that I'm just thinking back to my statistics class and trying to remember P hat and all those things. You you're trying to find a representative sample, and if you get a certain amount, that's going to give you a certain confidence level in it. And I guess that's the advantage, is you could talk to a few people and start to extrapolate out what you're probably going to get from the whole.
Okay, because when Grover Beach just did that, and that's actually who God be, they did this for Grover, and I just, not knowing much about it because we hadn't gone through it, I assumed that they reached out to 10,000 people. You know, I just had no idea. It was that I thought, oh my gosh, that's it. But, you know, they're the experts and they sort of know what they're doing. So I would defer to them. Okay. Did you find with the three different proposals, I found that two of them have worked with Slow on ballot measures, FM3 and True North, and that Godby was City of Santa Maria, which had a very successful, a huge mm-hmm. turnout for their ballot measure, mm-hmm. and Grover Beach as well.
That's right.
And were there any other, I didn't see any other local cities?
Some of the school districts,
okay.
Some has worked with the county before. So they all come recommended, and they all, when I talked to them, they knew of this county. They mm-hmm. they know our issues, even though they're further away, but seem like they've all been pretty successful in what they do.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Those are my only questions.
With the language development, assuming that there is a forward movement afterwards, do any or all of the three companies offer that phase two, or is that another hunt for a different consultant?
It is that these groups just do the mm-hmm. statistics, mm-hmm. just kind of give you this basic information, and then you're generally trying to find another group, and they can all recommend people that they work with, but it's a different skill set.
None of them has an advantage in terms of being able to offer a package.
I don't recollect that, but it looks like Kelly.
I think that what I saw in there was that they I don't know if all three do, but I saw that they do assist in the development of the ballot question. And so I don't know if that's something that, because I know that's what you were kind of asking about. I mean, as far as drafting the resolutions and everything that has to go to the county, we can do all that in-house, but they have the expertise in developing the question.
I would be interested for staff to pursue that as questioning, because if as part of the package they're going to assist us in that, then we don't have additional cost going to phase two or reduced additional cost.
Yeah, I think that it's going to be two separate tasks, and I don't necessarily think any of these groups really feel that they're the experts in that. They certainly have partners that will work in that field of developing the questions, but their main thing is to build a good foundation when they're asking these 60 to 80 questions, trying to really narrow it down of what is really of concern to people and what are they willing to give, how much can they give, and what kind of response to accountability is going to go with it, right? So they're really going to be giving us a whole bunch of data that we're all going to look at, and we're going to try to work with the NICS consultant to say, okay, these are the things that we think are resonating and we agree with that, and here's how we're going to develop this question to try to meet everyone's needs.
In terms of whatever the sample size, be it 200, 300, or 1,000, it's my understanding that as they do that, they're not just calling the first 200 people who answer the phone.
That's right.
But that they are amassing a database of people who actually, once they take a survey, marking, okay, this is a likely voter in this demographic group from this party, and whatever their final number of 200, 300, or 500 or 400 people is going to as closely mirror the actual demographic of the city. Is that correct, or is it
that,
just?
No, that is okay. Correct, and that is really what you're paying for, mm-hmm, is that expertise, mm-hmm, of someone to know what little subgroups people are in, and try to, you know, they want to give you information that is correct, because you can see that they all use that to say, look, we've been correct 93% of the time, so they're really trying to find that little secret of how do they nail down the demographics and really make this a representative sample.
Excellent. And then You said that staff has gone through them and really talked about it, and they've had a chance to ask questions of the firms. We obviously haven't done that, so I don't feel like I can even begin to advise you on which of the three that I would think is interesting. Right. My question is, how strongly do you and staff feel at this time? Do you feel like you have enough? If we said, you know what, go for it, you would know exactly for sure which one you're calling first.
Sure. We do feel that. And not only that, all three of these firms are great. There was nothing in here that gave us any concern. And they all, not only are they great technically, but they're all easy to communicate with and seem to match our style. So I think all three of these are winners here, and it's just a matter of working on the nuances.
So for in terms of direction from us, then you don't really need us to worry about which one of the three of these you're choosing. The question really is just making sure that the wishes and the will of the council are carried forward as we go forward.
That's right.
That sounds good. Any questions that have come up? Okay, then let's open this up to public comment. Does anyone have anything to say on this?
I'm June Cochran. I just wanted to thank you for joining Monterey Bay Community Power. And I also wanted to invite you to our August 22nd event. It's going to be at the SLO Library at 5:30. And it's going to be all about building electrification. And we have four experts that are going to be in a panel discussion. And I'm sure you're going to want to be there because electrifying buildings takes a lot of carbon out of our system. And I think it will be a great time to come. And then following that on Farmers Market on the 22nd, we're going to have Morrow Street at the Farmers Market where people can look at induction ovens, and we're going to have a chef there cooking on it, and electric heat pumps for everybody to see. So it's going to be a fun time, and I hope that you all come. Thank you.
Anyone else want to speak on this item?
Yes, I wanted to thank you for the questions that you asked because it cleared things up for me a lot, especially the one about the demographics, that all the demographics or most of them would be addressed. And I was wondering if staff would have any input into how the questions were asked, because I know on surveys, a lot of times there are leading questions that lead one way or the other. And I would like to feel confident that that wasn't going to happen, that the questions that would be asked would be very open, where people really didn't, where it wasn't slanted in a way that made people feel like they needed to answer a certain way to seem like good people or whatever. So thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, seeing no one, will bring it back to the council. Councilman Paulding, do you have comments?
I have a few comments. So I definitely had prepared my comments more in line with looking at the various advantages and disadvantages of each one of these three firms. So I probably won't go into as much detail. But I guess I'll make comments for the record, and then staff can choose to implement them or not. So let's see. The first... And I do want to make sure we get back to the discussion with regard to if we wanted to expand the scope of this to include other items such as the cannabis tax. So with that, the first comment I had, I'm going to go straight into True North. I saw that on there they had indicated that the city of San Luis Obispo was a client, but they weren't on their reference list. And so I would want to know why. They also speak to the fact that sending text messages can create liability for the city. And so I would want to ensure that any firm that we select doesn't put us in a position where we do incur liability. I believe I saw in Godby's proposal that they do use text messaging. In terms of deliverables, I noticed that both FM3 and GodBe provided like a PowerPoint presentation to present the results, whereas True North and GodBe also provided a written report. And so to me, that written report, I would assume, would go into more detail, and we'd be getting potentially more bang for our buck. And to the same end, I think that the latter two, both GodBe and True North.
Time's up.
Oh, that's it.
Thanks, Kelly.
I think that.
Just kidding.
I believe that both GodBe and True North provided a much more detailed methodology and schedule, timeline, and so forth. And so I think that's something to note. And then I noticed that travel, the costs associated with travel, were specifically included in GodBe's proposal and True North's proposal, but not in FM3. It specifically excluded those costs. And so I'm just concerned that we know there are going to be in-person meetings. They even speak to that, yet they didn't include those costs. So we could easily exceed that 24,000 or 21,000 that they recommended. So let's just nail those costs and make sure that those things are defined contractually speaking. All three had methodologies that were sound. The prices being comparable was nice to see. I like the fact that they speak to the telephone surveys or telephone-only surveys being a thing of the past, and that we're moving forward with the hybrid internet, phone, and in some cases email and text concept. Everybody seemed experienced and specifically had experience with local agencies in our area, which was good. One thing I did want to discuss with the council would be whether we are at this point in time, and maybe it's a question for staff, considering both a general or a special, if that's a decision we need to make tonight, so staff has direction to pursue one particular end with this, whichever firm is contracted with. So my two follow-up would be, what's the scope of this? Is it specifically a sales tax? Is it broader than that? And two would be, what I just explained. So those are all of my questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Storton.
Or comments.
Thank you. Let me find the page that I just lost. Reading through all the proposals, I really felt there was a lot of experience with each one, and I really felt they were very similar in the outcome of what we were going to get. I wasn't sure as to the significant difference from one from the other. There were a couple of things that I thought. One thing that GodBe mentioned in their report was live interviews by people located in the Western United States, which I thought, geographically speaking, it's important that people are aware of our area and what our community is about. So to me, that's kind of an important aspect that wasn't mentioned in the other ones. And then True North mentioned they did a pretest and programming of 20 houses prior to doing the survey, which I felt would be a good test case and provide good information to move forward with the additional research. And it wasn't mentioned in the other two, so I thought that was an important feature that company offered. You know, originally I actually came here tonight with something I thought would be my preference, but after discussion I really feel like synergy with city staff is extremely important, and I feel like if I mentioned it and we had three different opinions up here and then you had an opinion, we're just sending mixed messages all over the place. And so I just feel like if staff identified a company that they felt was best based upon the information provided us here tonight, where maybe some things could be added that we thought were important, that we could go that route. The cannabis part, I'm not sure. I didn't really think about that tonight. It seems very, we don't have anything to regulate or tax at this time. So it seems like the discussion is much bigger than just that. And then we're going to have to ask other questions. Do we even want that in our city? And then what does that look like in a tax? And I think it convolutes what we're trying to do in the first place. And so I feel like it's two different processes. I'm not sure how well it fits with this. So I guess I need to think about it and talk about it more, because I really didn't have that in my mind prior to tonight until you brought it up right now.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Or is it
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, sorry.
Should I stop? Is that what you're telling me?
Kelly, get the buzzer out. Kidding. Kidding. So I guess regarding the cannabis, I guess I would just defer to these folks if that's something, because where we are right now, we're going forward with this pretty quickly. So we haven't really talked about cannabis except sort of toying with, you know, the idea of maybe someday we might be interested in something, we don't know. So is it too early? I would just rely on them to give us some information or give information back to staff. And if you say, whoa, that's really interesting, then maybe, you know, let us know soon or something, but I wouldn't have enough information right now to say yes, I want to ask a question. But it might, like Councilmember Paulding said, perhaps it's a missed opportunity, but I'm not sure. So on that. And then the leading questions that Ms. Price brought up, I'm sure that they don't ask leading question, but that is a really good point, because when you kind of have rapport with someone on the phone, you sometimes want to answer them a certain way. Do you have a comment on that, Jim?
Just in general, what we're really trying to do is understand what 18,000 people mm-hmm. want. We're not trying to push anyone any direction, but at the same time, we're also trying to find out some of the details in those questions. So as people learn more and more, they may say, well, in that case, I'm supportive mm-hmm. of it, or mm-hmm. I'm not. So I think there really is a fine line there that you don't want to just do push polling to, you know, we're not trying to get people to support something that they don't want to support. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we want to have enough details. So all of these firms are professional, and they're just trying to find ways to get you and the rest of the community information about what 18,000 people are thinking.
Right,
so
yeah.
We will always be cognizant of that and yeah. make sure that doesn't happen.
Okay. I thought that all the proposals were pretty similar. I do like the idea of polling more people, 400, with Godbee. But again, and I do like the fact that also that Godbee worked with Grover Beach, which is right next door to us. Although we are very different communities, it's right here. It was very successful. But I would definitely defer to staff, because like the mayor said, we haven't had conversation with them and you have. And so that's a big part, I think, of being able to work with someone through this. So I'm in agreement of going forward with the staff recommendation. Thank you.
For me, so the general questions for my biggest concern in all of this is that margin of error, because the larger the margin of error, the less reliable the data is. And so that speaks to two parts of what I want to talk about. I would like to see us try to get up to that 400 call level. So for example, from FM3, perhaps, if I don't know if they're your preferred group, but perhaps we could say, well, we'd rather you go to 400 but only do 15 minutes. And mm-hmm. Godbee seemed to have given you tiers like that, and we didn't get mm-hmm. tiers with the one. I'm sure they could do something like that. So for whichever one that you go with, I would rather see that sample size go up and the time go down, because our margin of error is going to be as clear as possible. That also speaks to whether or not I would want any discussion of cannabis in there, because for every question that we defer and we do something else other than this answer, that margin of error is going to go up, and I'm not willing to do that. I have said in the past that I would like to ask this community about that, but we can do that on a measure. We can have an advisory vote on that. We can get all 18 or 12 of 18,000 people to give us a direct answer on that. We don't have to do polling to get that. So I would rather approach that way, keep this clean, keep this margin of error as small as possible so that we get as much bang for the buck as we can possibly get. In regards to whether it's a general or special tax, I believe that that's going to be part of what they're looking at, because we need to know, will the community support this, and or will the community support that? And I think that's part of what they're going to tell
us. You are exactly right, Mayor.
So, I'd like to see us get to 400 in a shorter survey, and keep it as focused as we can keep it, and get that margin of error as small as we can possibly afford for $25,000. Mm-hmm. So those are my comments.
Okay.
Do you have enough direction from council, or any other questions?
I do have enough direction, and we will get started on this. It's within the scope that I could just put together a contract and not have to come back to council with it.
Do you want a motion?
Yes,
okay.
We would.
All right. I would move to authorize the city manager to select a professional research firm and enter into an agreement to conduct a statistically valid survey of Arroyo Grande voters related to the potential future ballot measure.
Second.
Any discussion? I do have one little thing. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that I was looking at you and not at the rest of the council. I'm kind of hoping there was concurrence in making sure we keep that margin of error small and that sample size larger. But I don't know if that was concurrent.
I completely concur. Yeah, especially targeting the 400 sample size is important.
I think more is better, definitely.
Okay. Yeah. Then with that, can we get a roll call, please?
Mayor Pro Tem Barnidge?
Yes.
Councilmember Storton?
Yes.
Councilmember Paulding?
Yes.
And Mayor Ray Russom?
Yes. Tonight we have no closed session, which takes us to item 14, adjournment. Thank
what
you,
about
everyone.
Council
I skipped right over. I was looking at slide. Oh, we still got. See, I'm.
I did that this morning in our meeting, and they all told me about it.
Okay, well then I was channeling Jim Bergman. Yes, I was looking at that as the selection as the 11 item 11. Okay, council communications. Yes, we have to do this. This is selection of an alternate for the Mayor's City Selection Committee meeting on September 4th, 2019. It says Ray Russom, but I am not presenting this. Am I? That's news to me if I'm the one presenting that.
We just wanted, we thought that was your request.
That was not my request to
put it on the agenda.
So I will present it. Well,
that was Jessica's request.
Oh. So do you want to hear this item?
Absolutely. We can. I'm just not prepared to have a whole presentation for
everybody. Where's your
PowerPoint? That's okay. Here it is. So there is a mayor selection committee that when there is a appointment that is going to be shared between the cities, all the mayors get together on this committee and they work out who's going to be the appointment. And I think, Mayor, because of your work schedule, it would make it very, very difficult for you to attend these meetings. So what you would like to see is an alternate to be able to attend these meetings and represent the city.
What has happened prior is they can have a quorum without us. So it's not 100% necessary, but I defer, of course, no matter who is the Mayor Pro Tem, to Mayor Pro Tem first to take my place when I can't go. Mayor Pro Tem is unable to attend. So the way it happened from my point of view is Jessica said, we're going to bring this forward for transparency rather than me just asking who else I would like to have go. So as I said, I wasn't quite sure what was going to
happen. Sounds very wise, and transparency is always good. So is that true? Mayor Pro Tem, that you're not available for this?
It's my daughter's birthday. That's a true statement.
Okay. All right.
I don't know if she wants to do anything with me, but just in case, I'm going to keep it open.
So I guess it's looking for a volunteer of the two. Or you could volunteer Lon George.
Yeah, I know.
Right? Yeah, she's not here. Good idea.
You better, Lon.
What I understand is that meeting follows the SLOCOG meeting, which I'll already be at. And one of the issues that this that will be a subject of this meeting is appointing a representative to our mega region to pursue AB 101 housing funds, of which from a SLOCOG perspective would be beneficial. And so I would volunteer to, I don't know if it's an issue to appoint myself or recommend appointment of myself.
You're
from this committee.
You're a politician, right?
Okay, yeah. All right. So anyway, I'm volunteering to do that if it's the will of this council.
Second.
And you are already at SLOCOG anyway,
correct.
Right? All right.
Who moved? Oh, he moved? Yes. Just a voice vote is fine.
Okay. So is there any discussion? All those in favor say, come to the podium and tell us about it. Does anyone from the public want to come speak? I am in a rush tonight, aren't I? We have a motion on the floor and a second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries unanimously. So, yes, you get to go vote for yourself.
All right. Thank you.
Should you so choose, perhaps you'll have
maybe
some competition. Again, no closed session tonight, which takes us to adjournment. Thank you so much, everyone. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
She doesn't want us to say anything.
I did it again. There's no, there's, that is,
I wanted to talk about the Repair Cafe.